Can't hear you. There you go. Still can't hear you, buddy.
Yeah,
I can't hear you. Got him on mute. Yeah, we need you off mute there, brother. Welcome in to Unpaved, guys. Sean Salisbury here along with Adam Sager. We'll get that mic right for him in just a second. Grateful to have you in on a Friday. Much to talk about. Unbelievable, really good wild card round and some phenomenal pitching performances that were ridiculous in the final games yesterday and throughout the playoff series, including a couple rookies and one in particular that was sick with his performance against the Red Sox yesterday. We'll also talk last night's game with the Rams and the 49ers. Rams gave one away, but the 49ers made it tough on them, Sags, early on because they jumped out to a lead. A lot of self-inflicted problems by a team that we all think Super Bowl, and they've done that a couple times, two of the last 3 weeks, did against Philadelphia as well. Some things to fix with the Rams, who are very good, but don't kick the 49ers to the curb or bury them 6 feet under just yet. And a lot of NFL stuff to get to this weekend. And as well as that, we got our betting picks in college and the NFL, three games in college, three games in the NFL. And we'll also preview of it. There's some big ones going on. How good will Texas and Florida match up? Will coaches be in trouble? And then, dare I say, we're 5 weeks into the season, 6 weeks in, and Vanderbilt is a team that we're talking about against Alabama. Are we kidding here? Stegs, welcome in, man. Glad we got that mic.
Yeah, you got me?
Up. Welcome in on a Friday. We got you now, man. What's up?
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I don't know what that was. But, yeah, I mean, fun day yesterday, full of baseball. Good game last night. Mac Jones just continues to impress in that offense. But yeah, I think we got to start with baseball. And Sean, I don't want to start, you know, with you just being upset because your team lost. So let's have a little fun to start. The Phillies announced
What the hell is fun about the Red Sox getting beat?
I'm going away from the Red Sox.
I think you're going to be surprised by my reaction about last night when you asked me about it, though. I do.
Okay. All right. So we'll get there in just a second. But the Phillies announced that they're going to do a 9-9-9 challenge. So 9 hot dogs, 9 beers, and 9 innings challenge. It's $55. But here's the kicker. Because we know you can't – teams can't really do this by saying, hey, you got to go out and drink 9, you know, tall boys that you get at baseball games nowadays.
Yeah, there might be a little legal issue there, Segs, with the drunk.
So it's 9 fun size hot dogs, which, you know, probably about, you know, not that big. And then it's 9.
I wouldn't know anything about a small hot dog, but anyway, go ahead and figure since we're having fun.
Not where I thought that would go, but yes. And then it's 9 petite beers.
And 9 innings.
So that's what I said. I looked all over
this morning. Afraid of toxic masculinity? Is that what they're afraid of?
Yeah. I still never found the ounces that they were selling of the beer. It looks like the, you know, like the little things you try.
It's got to be an 8 ounce,
yeah, that
right?
You try at restaurants when you get the little, yeah, like,
oh, you're talking about like the what are those?
You taste the different types of beer. Yeah,
yeah. They'll put what are the things called when you put like 3 different beers and you test them all and it comes like in a shot glass type of thing?
Yeah, like those little tiny bubble glasses.
Right.
That's what.
You do that
that's
with food
what the beer
sometimes
is
too. Right. Yeah, I got you.
Right. That's what the beer is. So you can see like that's about the size of the beer. So I would say 6 ounces.
That's weak.
Yeah. So it's basically
smart.
Half of a hot dog. Half of a beer in 9 innings per inning. I mean, so you're really only eating probably like 4 hot dogs.
Your sound went out again, Segs. Your sound went out again. I will tell you this. There you go. Now I got you. Now it's out. So there's a wire loose on your mic or something, man.
Yeah, trying not to touch anything.
There you go. There you go. Now we can hear you. So half a beer, half a hot dog in Philly.
I mean, yeah. Could you do it in 4 innings?
Come on now, son. Here's what I could tell you now. I mean, I'm no Joey Chestnut, okay? But I will tell you this, because I do like hot dogs. You've seen me eat a little bit, so you know I can throw back 25 Jack-in-the-Box tacos in a contest we have, right, or whatever it was. So I will tell you, first off, Philly, I know the fans are like, come on now, you guys. There's buddies of mine that live in Philly who will finish that off in an inning and a half or two innings max. I thought you were going to go with the full nine and the full nine. I will tell you this, a half a beer, like a 6 or 8 ounce, like in the shot glass, because they're doing and a petite beer and a mini dog, but a little bit bigger than a mini dog, not as big as a regular hot dog, and definitely not a foot long. I can have the hot dogs done in before 2 ounces in the first inning. That's like two bites a dog. That's stealing. And now that it's beer, like the 6 ouncer, oh yeah, you just guzzle that down. I could have those done by inning one as well. Beer doesn't really, you know, maybe if it was a tall boy and I didn't eat, beer doesn't really get me drunk fast if I was trying to get buzzed or something. Now, you give me one of those ones with 9 or 10 ounces of alcohol in it, you know, one of those type of beers and stuff. Yeah, but that may get me. But that's an easy one. I'd have that done. I could have that done in two innings. Easy. In the first inning, if the top and the bottom, easy. Now, you get the nine of them. I can get through nine innings of dogs pretty easy, because the truth of the matter is that once they're wrapped up and put, you know, the stuff on them, and ketchup does belong on a hot dog, as well as mustard and relish and onions. And I know that's blasphemous to a Chicago guy. Okay, I could eat it without.
Hey, I put ketchup on my hot dog, so
I do too. I can even add on the bottom, and sometimes, Segs, I get a little thin layer of mayonnaise. I'll go mayonnaise, mustard, ketchup,
that's too far.
Relish, peppers. Far. I know some say that, but just a little. You know, my mother did that. When I was growing up, my mom did that, put a little mayo on it, and that's where it started. Now, it's not a regular occurrence, but I've had a tendency, even more so on a brat. I'll throw a thin layer of mustard, mayonnaise, a good layer of mustard, and then a heavy ketchup, relish, onions, all that stuff. Now, the beers, if it was a full nut, what's that?
No.
It's basically a Chicago dog with ketchup. That's how I'd like it. I love those. You know, the pickles and the peppers they have on your guys' dogs there too. No, nobody does it better than you guys. Just I would add a little ketchup. Now, although when you go to what's our place that we have here now, Segs, you guys have the one, it's got the dogs and the beef sandwich.
Portillo's.
We got it here now in Texas, and I'm a regular there. I can eat the Chicago dog there without putting the ketchup on it. You could still, it still tastes delicious, right? And the beef's good, but the Al's beef and the legitimate Al's beef in Chicago, untouchable. So the nine dogs I could get through at a game, if I sign, no problem. And I think you could too. We could sit there. Hell, that's just two an inning. And you know, you get if you wanted to do it that way. Well, that's even more. When I say two an inning, we'd be done by inning five. I can do that. I actually can. Now, when you get to the beers, I imagine you probably can, because I know you're a beer. You could get through the beers easy. 12 ounce beer, and it's not even the buzz for me, Segs, at all. I can get through that. Hell, you know me. I can. I'm probably better at the tequila shot that you like your beer. Right. If you said, "Nah, I can do that easy and still get through it," I don't know what it is, but I don't get hung over any of that with tequila. But the like 12 ounce beers, it wouldn't be the buzz. It would be the bloated. Can my gut handle nine beers?
Right.
Although it's still, now we did that in college. My buddies and I would go to Dodger games and we'd drink a beer an inning, and we'd have the one guy who didn't drive and drive us home on a day game. We'd do that. But it wasn't a special. We just had to pay all the money for the beers, which right now, all these years later, hell, you'd have to take out a small mortgage to buy nine beers and nine dogs on a regular day. Jesus. But I would have a hard time getting through nine beers of the – I would just be full. Even if it was nine beers without the hot dogs, I would just be full, because I just don't have the room in there for that. Now, the small, like a half a beer, hell, what I'd do is guzzle like four of them quick and eat the dogs.
Right.
And then cruise the rest of the way. It would be easy. Yeah. Be easy.
Yeah.
No problem. The Philly fans are going to be like, this is soft. We're tougher than this. We do better than this. You know that.
To have multiple people like doing the actual 9-9-9 challenge, where it's the full hot dog, the full beer, and just like, you know, kind of shitting on this little deal.
There's no question.
And it's still $55. I know that it is like, when you really talk about it, that's not a ton, but man, it's still, I mean, going to games nowadays is just, you can find tickets for pretty cheap, you know, especially if you use some of the different apps and stuff, but you get there and they just price gouge you with stuff, unless you're going to like a Falcons game, or was it the Braves too that did it, where they dropped all their prices real low?
I think so.
There was a baseball team. So It's just
crazy. You get your one day a week dollar dog night. You know, Houston does a dollar dog, like I think Tuesdays now in Houston. But I don't know, Siggs, are you more? And so, but the truth is, if you go there on a regular night at any ballpark, you know, especially if you get a tall boy, I mean, you get what, $18 a beer and $7 bucks or whatever a hot dog. And if you got a family of four, or if it's just you and your buddies and you're saying, well, we'll splurge, that's a counting the tickets. You're talking about a $500 night. Easy. Yep. For friggin' easy. And if you want to grab a hat on the way out, well, good luck to you in any ballpark. Isaiah, I disagree. Hot dogs are gross. Nah, I love hot dogs. Steaks, do you still love them? I mean, I don't eat them as much as I did when I was growing up, but because they were cheap and it was an easy way for the food. But I'm more of, I'd probably say, Steaks, if I have the choice, you know, like a Chicago dog, which is the best dog, or a, you know, the Fenway Frank's pretty damn good, dude, but the Chicago dog's the best. So the only reason you wouldn't say Chicago dog's the best if you like dogs, if you're a dog connoisseur, which I think I kind of am, is because you're just like, oh, I want to prove that Chicago doesn't make the best dogs. It's like pizza, right? Are you thin? Right. Are you Detroit Square? Are you New York? Are you the big, you know, the pizza, the Chicago pizza, you know, the what are we, not stuffed. We don't call it stuffed.
No, it's deep dish.
Yeah, deep dish. The same, you know, stuffed is now the stuffed cheese and a crust. But I, for me, the I'm probably like on when I'm at home grilling and stuff, I lean to brats, like a beer brat. Like I soak them in beer and put a brat. That to me, like, or a spicy Italian sausage. I would go there before a dog now, even though I still love them. But you give me a great Italian sausage with peppers and onions and all that stuff on it. And it's got some spice to it. I'm all in. I'm all.
Yeah,
but I could go through the one you're talking about. The other easy. Day. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love brats.
Yeah.
I figured soak them in beer. Segs, I think you do. Do you soak yours in beer?
Yeah.
If you're not soaking them in beer, or even buying the Johnsonvilles that are beer, they've already done it. But I still soak those. That is a good brat will, dude, take you to another place if it's grilled properly, right? You know, not put in the microwave. I'm talking about cooked right.
Right. Yes, you got to grill. Grill is the way to go. Like grill.
No doubt.
I mean, I know you can do other ways, but grill, pan fry if you don't have, for brats, I'm talking. If you don't
cut them open and then do it old school where you fry them growing up. Way. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I knew you would like the brats with the thicker, you know, meat.
Well, who doesn't? Yeah, of course. I mean, like man, like brat. I mean, who doesn't? Don't egg me on a Friday, dude. I'm playing golf today, so you can't get me mad. Even though the Red Sox conversation is a brat conversation,
you ain't getting me mad. How about Cam Schlitter last night? 8 innings, 12 Ks, no walks, 5 singles, no runs. I mean, that was arguably one of the best playoff performances we've ever seen. He was incredible.
Littler was off the charts. Segs, now listen, I'll tell you, let me back up just a little. I do want to give credit. Early's he's got some big balls too now, the Red Sox lefty.
Yeah.
He is – he listen, if you can get a play by Lowe at first base, which is a routine play normally, and then the bloop to right field where three cats sit there and watch like it's Bad News Bears, and Corey even admitted when they came in between, you know, innings and said – well, we got to help with some defense. They didn't play any defense. Yeah. They had the big inning, and then next thing you know, it's 4-0. And then it became insurmountable because you kind of had an idea about inning 3 or 4 with this big fella, which Schlittler was doing.
Yeah,
he was dealing. Segs, I'm telling you, you start to look ahead, Fried and Cole and him and Rodon. He's nasty. And you know what I loved? You see his emotion there, but for the main part of the game, Segs, he was stoic. Pumping it 100. I mean, he was spotting everything. And even though it was a Red Sox guy, I got to this point, and I'm pacing the whole time, and especially when we got down 2-0, then 3 and 4, and I'm like, okay. Now, and the way he was going, there wasn't many hits in the bats, as we saw, just 5, but he wasn't giving him anything to drive. And then he was pounding the zone and up and moving it in and out and up and down. I at the near the end of the game, around the 7th inning, I conceded. Now, not concede, hoping they get, you know, run into one, right? But I said, you know what? Take your hat off, clap for the dude. I thought he was phenomenal. It's one of the best. It's the best rookie. Now I'm going back to when Doc Gooden, because when I was going up, Segs, and Doc, you know, similar type performances. He was a monster, like in 20 or 21. I'd go watch him and Fernando when the Mets would come. You'd see him and Fernando Valenzuela was. you know, he was a rookie, but not 20, or I don't think at the time or whatever. And Schlitter's a little older, and I think, I mean, what's Schlitter, 22 or Schlittler, I guess, and early 22, 23 range. But his demeanor, Segs, looked like a guy who'd done it, had been in the playoffs 15 times. But he was phenomenal. So instead of getting bothered by the Red Sox performance, I tip my hat. They were just better, and he was just better. And he was really, really hard to deal with last night. Segs, it wouldn't matter who they were playing. He could have been pitching against his own team. They would have had no shot. He could have been pitching against the Dodgers. They'd have had the Philly. They just – last night was a night that you weren't getting to them. And we saw – we've seen Skubal. We've seen Crochet. We've seen those performances throughout this early rounds. There were four or five times we've seen you ain't touching that pitcher. And in bullpen stuff as well with Mason Miller, that when they're going that good, you're just not touching them, man. And he was that guy last night. It was impressive.
Yeah, he like you said, he was just even keeled. He was never felt like he was in a battle up at the plate. He just felt like he was one step ahead of every hitter.
And how efficient he was with motion too. On stakes, he didn't his body. Just everything was smooth. There was nothing rigid about his performance last night. I never felt like he was in trouble. And if he did get a base runner, it was like I never had any thought that he wasn't going to come out of it. It's just the way I felt yesterday.
Yeah, it was just incredible to watch and just to know that, he's pitching at home in Yankee Stadium, but it's still Yankee Stadium against the Red Sox in the playoffs in an elimination game. I mean, it doesn't get much of a bigger stage than that. Yeah, I mean, the World Series obviously is a huge stage, but when we're just talking baseball, most everybody's minds kind of just goes to Yankees Red Sox. And when they faced off, you know, we've had the Aaron Boone home run in the past, and then we had the Red Sox finally break through and beat the Yankees. It was just
Bucky Dent in the 70s when he borrowed Mickey Rivers' bat and homered, right?
Yeah. So I mean, it was just it's another one of those moments that will live in this rivalry for a very, very long time.
Say, that's you know how what else too? You make a good point, and I'm even gonna look at it along with you and like put an exclamation point by it. It stuck that it was against my Red Sox, but I get it. Is early, even early, a rookie coming into Fenway Park as a visiting team, right? That would have been tough, right?
Yeah.
And had he done this performance on the road somewhere else, I said, okay, great. But I'm almost thinking as well, he's in his own park. You know the expectations and how hard they can be. Hell, listen, if Stanton strikes out three times to start the game, they're going to let him have it, right? And I know he's young, but their demands, I mean, they're fans. They get into it, and they understand this rivalry. I'm not so sure it's not even more pressure on him. Had he had gone to Fenway and done it, I'd have said impressive too, no doubt. But sometimes away cooking can actually take you out of, like, the uptight. You're out of the ticket business. You're just focused on your job. And when they boo you, it's a sign of respect. So you're like, damn, I'm in. Right? Yeah. I can handle this. Even though it's difficult and it's like, you know, you got Yankee Stadium or Fenway Park. I get it. But I'm almost thinking at time sakes because the elimination game in front of your own people, you know, that there's even a little extra pressure because if you start off slow and you're putting your team in a bind, you hear the rumblings from your own crowd. So I'm even going to go even a step further. While most of the time I'd say on the road to do it, but I have been even in my career, like when you played early, that I felt like going on the road felt, I don't want to say easier, but felt I could dial in easier because I knew what had to be done. At home, sometimes you can even get casual. You know, you can. Last night, he pitched like he was in somebody else's building and that the pressure was there was no pressure. And that it almost pitched like he had a 7-0 lead when the game started.
Right away.
But I would say that there's unique places like Philly and Boston and the Yankees and those, you know, the what goes with the history of their teams and franchises, that pitching at home can sometimes be more pressure, especially when it's elimination. I thought he was put it this way. You're not going to see a better performance. I mean, we've seen a couple, but in the next rounds as they go along, you'll be hard-pressed to get a performance like that as the hitting and the better players and the better teams continue to rear their head. He was fantastic last night. So I wasn't even mad. I just said, you ran into it. You just got to take the L and move on, and that's what the Yankees gave him last night.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see what the Red Sox do this offseason to try and bolster that roster that is a very, very good roster, but They got some things they got to figure out. Moving on, Isaiah. Nope, I am not a Cubs fan. I am a White Sox fan. So I am with you. Go Brewers in this series. Cubs get the 3-1 win over the Padres. I think when you look at it from San Diego's point of view, it just comes down to two guys. It's Machado and it's Tatis. They weren't good enough. 2 for 22. Machado hit a home run. They had a couple walks between both of them, and they struck out 7 times. But your two best players, your two biggest players, cannot go 2 for 22 in a 3-game series, and you expect to win that series. They pitched well enough in all 3 games to win, and the offense did not support the pitching staff for the Padres.
Yeah, and Sags, when you get to the bullpen, I mean, you know, they went to Suarez early. Yep. You know, the Padres, you think they've got some people up, the lefty. I mean, he had thrown like 60 pitches, and then they put him up 3 days in a row. I mean, they had just got to, but it wasn't the pitching that let him down. They kept you around the whole time. And the difference, too, is the hitting at the right time. Cubs game one, back-to-back home runs. Clutch hitting at the right time. You didn't get it. We'll be able to say that as we move forward. Well, this says that if the Yankees go in there and Judge and then that group, 2 or 3 in the middle of the lineup, struggle, that they'll get beat in the next series. If the middle of the Phillies lineup struggles, they're going to dodge. I mean, some are deeper than others, but you're exactly right, especially in a 3-gamer. You know, you're not hot in the first two, and you get hot in the next 3 in a 5-game series, different. But in a 3-gamer, they have to rear their head. And I'll also say this. The play yesterday, I don't know how much you got to watch it. I thought that Dansby Swanson's defense, in one inning in particular, but all the way through, was great. So they gave their pitchers support. They got timely hitting, and they prevented the big boys from – dominating the series. Hell, you can even throw the Bogarts in there as well, Segs. Those guys that did not take over the series, and the Cubs pitching was better than their hitting. Hell, the Padres pitching for the most part was better as well, except a couple of key hits at the right time, and the Cubs did their thing, and they deserved to move on. The big boppers just couldn't do it for the Padres.
Yeah, and you bring up Xander Bogarts. You know, you got to look at that last at bat, that end of the game. On that low strike call, I mean, it was inches low. It wasn't, you know, the top of the ball touching the bottom of the zone. I mean, there was inches down below the zone, and it was called strike 3, game over. And, you know, they kind of lost their minds there. And in a 2-run game, all it takes is sometimes a guy to get on base. And then you never, like you said, you just kind of got to run into one. And if you run into one, boom, you have a tie game. And, you know, let's see what happens now in extras or going into the ninth, whatever it is. So the automated balls and strike system that's coming next year that we learned about a couple weeks ago, where, you know, you have two challenges, we'll still have the ump. The ump can make the right or wrong call, but you can challenge them. And as long as if you challenge and you win, you keep that challenge as long as you keep getting it right. So, I'm interested to see how that affects games next year. And then as we move into the playoffs, you know, when you get a big call like that and then boom, you tap your helmet. Now, all of a sudden the pitcher's in his head thinking like, yes, we've won the game. We're moving on to then boom. Now I got to get back up there and throw
the emotions, right?
The emotions, the ups and downs of that it can really affect a game.
No doubt. And Stags, you mentioned it. And Bogarts has got pop, so he is capable of running, running into more than one. I hate the whoever's something scratching there. I don't know if it's there. Just so I want to let you know, you can hear that. Is that with that's last night is exactly why they're going to the electronic tracks. That's why they're doing it.
Yes,
for reasons like that in games that are close and that one swing of the bat does matter, they're going to. But you're exactly right. You think you threw a strike that wasn't a strike, but you got the call. You start to walk off the mound, touch the helmet, bam, and then it goes back there and you got to go back and resettle yourself. Games will be won and lost with that same emotion, not just where the ball was, but, oh, I got to come back. And then you're a little cognizant. And you realize, man, one swing of the bat, and then that ball raises 2 or 3 inches into some guy's zone. and right down to Cock, and then he ends it. Now, all of a sudden, the whole series has changed back around. And in a short series, there's a chance that that you go home as opposed to moving on. And so it does matter. It's something I never would have thought I'd like. I still can't. I'm still anxious to see how I'm going to like it overall. But we got to get it right, just like we got to get NFL calls right. We got to get it right. And if that's what it takes, because he at least would have got one more swing at it, Segs. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they would have one more. You know, cut at it, or one more at bat at it, or two more at bats if somebody gets on more. And then you never, especially in that ballpark, where what may end up as a pop fly ends up in the seats. So you just never know, wind blowing out, wind blowing in. So, but I have no problem with the way the series turned out. As far as, oh man, that team lucked their way into it. The Cubs worked their way into it, played great defense in the series. The Padres didn't get enough at the plate. The pitching throughout was great. And then the Dodgers, just as we saw, they didn't play. They won in two. But we're in for one hell of a series with this one now moving forward. So it turned out. And then Detroit got another performance that was, you know, they were able to pull through theirs and take care of it. The truth of the matter is, I think Detroit overall, and this is no disrespect to Cleveland, probably going forward, Segs, it may be a little better. You know what I'm saying? Maybe. And I hate to say that, because I love – I think they're probably – and we had a little bit higher expectations going in. So I would say that the better team did win, although if Cleveland would have been representing – they're a type that sneaks in and beats somebody, beats Seattle, and then goes on and beats – next thing you know, they're 3-3 in the doggone ALCS, getting ready to go to the World Series. So tremendous season by them and a great run. But unfortunately, they just ran out of gas at the end, and Detroit was able to find a little bit of fuel, unlike what cost them – at the end to move on. So, and you're going to get to see Scooble sooner than later again, which will be a treat.
I think when you look at Cleveland, you look at Cincinnati, both those teams from Ohio, they had to do so much work to get into the playoffs that sometimes you get there and you just kind of have that letdown because you've worked so hard to get there that it's just like, you get there, you kind of take that deep breath, and then boom, you're out, especially with these three
exhausted games your energy, Six. How many of us have done it in real life? Oh, I do it on Friday. Oh, it's Fridays here. Thank goodness. Yes. And then you get lounge. You say, man, this is kind of cozy. I'm going to go do this, but I don't have to do shit. Now, I know that when you tell people that, they'll say, no, we were ready. Of course, it's not an excuse. But the human nature of that, because you did it. Well, look, remember my guy Clint Hurdle talks about that. Remember when they had to win 22 or 24 Segs or whatever it was to get in? Yep. And they went on, and then you know you're exhausted. By the time you've done that, I mean, you've used every pitcher, you've exhausted guys, don't get rest. I mean, Cincinnati and Cleveland, you had to empty the bucket. And when you empty the bucket, and then you get there at the very end, and the other team may not have emptied it, I'm going to tell you what, I got nothing but respect for the way Tito handled his Reds and the way that the Cleveland Guardians played. But in both of those series, in truth, I think at the beginning of the year, if you'd have said these two are going to meet in the playoffs, who's the two teams moving on? You probably would have said the Dodgers in Detroit. You probably would have said that. So,
I
can't wait till the next series, because we've got some serious ass matchups, man. I can tell you.
Yeah. So they all kick off tomorrow. First off will be the Cubs at Brewers. That game kicks off at 1:08 Central, so 2:08 Eastern. Then we go to the Yankees and Blue Jays in Toronto. That game kicks off at 3:08 Central, 4:08 Eastern. And then we have the Dodgers Phillies, and then we have the Tigers going out west to take on Seattle. That game kicks off at 7:38. So
it was a 2-2-1 Segs, or is it three? Is that how they're doing this? Is that how they do it in the divisional round? 2-2-1, or is it two? Is it 2-3? No, it can't be. Who had a better record this year? Seattle. Is it 2-3? How are we doing this? That's a great question.
I think it's 2-2-1. Yeah, that is a great question, but I'm pretty sure.
They've changed it. I can't remember, because I run the football and basketball and baseball kind of start to collide on how we're doing it. It's not 2-3. It's 2-2-1, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe it's
2-2-1. I thought it was.
I'm trying to.
For me, I thought it was. So if you hit it, and like I said, because I'm sitting here thinking, well, the NBA, that's right. What's football's? Well, football's the easiest one because you only play one. You know, we only play one game and you move on, single elimination. But with a basketball and baseball, I can't remember which one's which and how they're doing. And they've changed over the years. And NLCS, it's 2-2-1. Yeah, no, I know in Isaiah in the AL and NLCS, it's 2-3-2. where yes. They're trying to limit as much travel or as the yes. little least amount of travel possibly. But I thought it was 2-2-1, and there you go.
Yeah.
So that is. So Seattle will get the obviously the home field advantage through this, but I think this is a hell of a matchup, Segs. I do. And I'm going to tell you what, we're going to talk about Scooble in Detroit. If you're sleeping on Seattle Mariners pitching staff, you are wrong, yeah. buddy. Because going in, that was the strength of their team. Yes. Going in, that was. Then they went and got Naylor. They went and got Suarez from Arizona to add to Cal Raleigh's power. And so it's kind of yeah. – and Raleigh is kind of taken over for, oh, we talk about Cal Raleigh. Why? Well, because he deservedly so, 68 home runs as a catcher, and they're well-rested and ready to go. But the truth of the matter is, going into the season, Segs, when I was thinking about the Rangers, the Astros, and the Mariners, all three that have frontline starting pitching yes. when they're healthy, DeGrom for them, and you know, when you look here for Fromber and Hunter Brown, you look out there, they were a not only formal, a deep starting pitching staff, and they're really good, capable of shutting you down. But with the hitting and the power bats have kind of taken over. And so we almost forget, oh, that's right. Hell, you want to go down the list of the dudes they're going to run out there? They can compete on the mound, and hence why they were able to come and overtake the division along with the added power that we didn't know Seattle was going to have when the right. season started. So pretty impressive, and you're going to have to pitch well to them because they're playing good baseball and played really good baseball to win the division.
What about when you look at this Dodgers-Phillies? I know we've talked about it a couple times that if it were the matchup we get – well, we do get it. Game one tomorrow, 5:30. I mean, to have this to go with, you know, Florida State, Miami, and Alabama, Vanderbilt, and all the game, Florida, Texas, all the games we have in college football, it's going to be one hell of a Saturday. Last Saturday was great because we had a ton of good college football matchups, and the Ryder Cup was kind of a letdown the way it was going. But we still had that going on. Kind of the same thing here. Divisional round starts off for the MLB playoffs, and then we have huge games in college football that are going to affect things moving forward, especially when you look at if Florida State loses, if Alabama loses, or Vanderbilt. You know, it's going to change some things when we look at the playoff picture for college football, that tomorrow is going to be a really fun day.
Yeah, I can't wait. And I'm going to tell you what, with all the TVs, I'll have a lot of – focus burning a hole through the Dodgers and Phillies. I will say, I'm going to tell you, I didn't have the Dodgers going to the World Series. I know where it's just in the division. I just didn't. All the hype that surrounded them, and rightfully so, I said, well, can they do this again? And of course they can. But Segs, I'm going to tell you, man, I'm leaning Philly. And I'm a side there. There's a swagger about them, like I've said, and they can match you. And you know how it goes when they get rolling, man. They get that momentum in that building and the way they are. I'm going to take Philly in the series. Now, that's blasphemous for a guy who grew up Dodgers and going to Dodger Stadium, but I'm taking my feelings of the emotion of where I grew up and all that out of it. I've been riding Philly in the National League for the majority, if not the whole year, as far as I believe that they're going to be a part of this. There's just something about them, aside from the fact that they're talented, they can pitch as well, but they got some guy, when you watch them, there's guys on that I think the Schwarbers, and they live for this moment, man. I know a lot of guys will say they do, but I've watched this movie before.
Yeah, we've seen this line.
I'm gonna take Philly in five in a dramatic series. I'm gonna take Philly in five. Both of them will get a game in the other's building until game five. I'm gonna take Philly in five, and because I know most of the world not named Philadelphia, there's gonna take the Dodgers, I would think. Just because, but from a baseball standpoint, I think the Phillies can swing with them, and I think that they can pitch with them. Give me the Philadelphia Phillies in five. I'm not gonna waffle from my thoughts at the beginning of the season. I'm gonna stick with it.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting having Ohtani start game one, and if he comes out and is just Shohei pitch, you know, and he dominates this lineup, you know, Philadelphia. The fans, the organization, they're going to not panic, but it's going to be like, oh, shit. Like, we still have their other good pitchers to go. Like, he's kind of just still working his way back into pitching.
Right.
And he's pitched well. I'm not taking – but he can come in and change that series in a second. With
if they win game one, Segs, with him on the mound, if they win game one, I know you'd say it about anything, but if Ohtani now, if Ohtani was Ohtani normally on pitching where he was giving you seven and two thirds, that he was fully built up the way that we would expect when he has the full season, fully healthy, all of it, I would say that look out. I would have a hard time picking the Phillies over the Dodgers. I'm still wondering, okay, how long will they let him go? How much will, or is it just, hey, all hands on deck, we're letting him let it rip. The offseason's next if we go through, or the rest of this, depending on if you win or lose. But if they win game one, they are going to be really difficult to overcome. Put it this way, who can overcome a bad game one better?
I still feel like the Dodgers with their
pitching. I do too. I would say if the Dodgers lose game one, I'm giving them a better chance to overcome a loss than Philadelphia, just because the truth of the matter is if Ohtani was who he is, he can be your number one. But right now he's probably, just because of where he is, he's not your number one. So you're going to get your number one or in game two or three is my point, right? So Philly has to win game one and has to get to him on the mound, and probably pretty quickly. We'll see if they, because he's going to pump at 100, Segs. You know that. Yeah. And he's got more than two pitches, and you know the momentum at the plate. You got to control, not only control him on the mound, but you got to control him at the plate too, and not let him get started quick, like two home runs in game one we saw in the Red series. You got to shut him down and then give it to me. But I think they're more apt to overcome a first game loss than Philly would be. That's my opinion.
And Christopher Sanchez going game one.
He's damn good, dude. Yes. Damn good. You're running a stud out there, no doubt. They can't lose with him. They have to win this one.
Right. And what helps him is, lefty going against Ohtani, going against Freddie Freeman. But then they have Mookie Betts. And, it's just like that lineup for the Dodgers is so good. And the Phillies is just as good with Schwarber and Harper.
Agreed.
And Trey Turner. And you just keep going. But – man, this is going to be a fun series. And it's like, the wife wants to go do some stuff. And I'm like, hey, wait a second. We got some stuff going on Saturday.
For me, you want to go anywhere, it better be to a place where I'm eating wings and drinking a cold beer and still watching. Other than that, I ain't moving my ass from the seats to watch not only good college football, but the drama of this. This buildup, man. Now the question is, Segs, truthfully, after you win this, as good as Milwaukee's been, right? And you're still in that cut. You got to move on. You hope that you don't breathe the sigh you're talking about of damn. And if you go five and you exert yourself, right? And I'm talking about you emptied your bullpens and everybody. And then all of a sudden you go and you're like, and the other team sweeps. You're like, damn. I mean, you got to gather yourself again, because, we're talking there. There's the casual fans like, oh, the Milwaukee, they got no chance against Philly or the Dodgers if they move on. You're saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. Have you seen the arms in Philly? And in Milwaukee, and if you watch the way they play, they've been as good as we've had all year long, and they've sustained it. And they're playing, dude. They're playing. They are well managed, and they're having a blast. Can't you tell, Segs? They are having a blast.
Oh yeah.
And as much as we say we get rid of the batting average and playing defense, it's all about the home run, the long ball, and good starting pitching. I'm going to tell you what, defense will come into play, as will base running, in both of these series in the National League and the American League, but. We take it for granted, but I'm going to tell you what, if Swanson in yesterday doesn't make a couple plays like he did and you get runners and then one swing of the bat, who knows who the Brewers are playing in this one as opposed to how it turned out. So I can't wait to see it. I'm even more excited for these than I am college football. And this is a huge college football weekend and a handful of games.
Yeah. So again, kicks off tomorrow at 1 Central with the Cubs at Brewers, and then games all day long. Sean, paying off the poll question from yesterday, who makes the bigger impact tonight, which was last night, Christian McCaffrey, Puka Nacua, Matthew Stafford, or the 49ers defense? And I think we might have left out the guy that made a huge difference, and that was Mac Jones. I mean, went out there, and he just played his ass off. You could just tell that he fits that system well. And we always talk about, oh, can any guy just walk into a system and play it? That's the one system that I think Kyle Shanahan has shown. He just grabs guys and he puts them in there. And if you can play on time, you can, figure out what he wants you to figure out with the defense, that you could play really good football no matter where you were drafted, no matter if you failed somewhere else, no matter if you're a bust, quote unquote, that was drafted high like Mac Jones and had to leave the Patriots after struggling. I mean, Mac Jones is playing great in that offense, and it just reminds me of you and JB talking about the $60 million man in Brock Purdy and the $800,000 man in Mac Jones, and Mac Jones is playing just as good as Brock Purdy has in the past.
Well, he's the same guy, just a little taller, right?
Right.
Yeah. Not overly strong arm, not overly athletic, not overly mobile. Do enough to get it done. Smart. When you're throwing on time, they're going to put people in position, even though they're little receiver shy. They're going to give you a chance to hit the guy in the flat, throw the check down, hit the route that's open, and do it. And you know what else? Mac Jones was clearly the best player on the field last night. But, you know, and toughness, too, came back. Some people thought he wasn't going to get back in the game, came back in, and still did. You know, but Segs, according to the poll question, the last place finisher was the best because they forced Kyron Williams to lay it on the ground, right? And then they also got the stop in overtime on the call that McVay still is like, should I have kicked it? Should I have not? So in truth, and that's worth talking. So that's one. San Francisco's defense, and I think going in, we thought two things, Siggs. The reason why we thought, well, it's got to be one of the other guys, Nacua, McCaffrey, Stafford. Well, Mac Jones is really the backup, and the Rams are good on the road. He can't continue this the way he's played so far. And then the other side was, well, the 49er defense, while great, and Fred Warner and the rest of it, they're banged up, and they're when I say banged up, they have too much pressure on them to deal with, you know, because their offense is a little bit depleted. What are they going to do? Well, it's kind of like a clutch hit. They got the stops they needed at the right time, and the offense did a great job of jumping out and getting a 14-0 lead. The other side, you mentioned Mac Jones, Segs. You know, I think Brock Purdy's a really good player. I do. And I think if you'd have said, well, Mac Jones is going to beat out Brock Purdy, I'd have laughed and said, well, Mac Jones is a solid backup and he'll start games for you, but Purdy just got paid. And that may still be the case. We may be even premature. But I can tell you this, that glove's on the mound, you better be careful. Because Mac Jones is picking it up, and he's not just going out there and kind of playing well, winning one, losing one, turning the ball. He's protecting the ball, and they're winning. And he's putting up – last night he had fairly gaudy numbers and made some really, really good throws. So don't look now, but if Brock still – if he can't get in the lineup and this continues, how can you take him out of the lineup? Now you won again, and I think a lot of people were surprised. Man, they only had one loss going into this. Like, oh, damn. That's right, the 49ers, they're actually, when we've kind of left them for dead, like, oh, they can't overcome all this again like last year. Well, they have, and they got McCaffrey involved in the passing game early in the game as well, just to make sure that you created spacing for Mac Jones. He made great decisions last night. It was a hell of an effort on the road, and then resilient by the Rams to come back, but also resilient by the 49ers to stave it off because it would have been easy. Oh, here it goes again. Rams close. Stafford's doing his thing, and they're getting down. I'm telling you, Segs, and if you remember when Mac Jones came out as a first-round pick, the 49ers liked it.
Yeah.
They liked him, and then before that, they liked Darnold, and they didn't get either one. And what happened? Both of them ended up going and playing there. And both of them played there. So Shanahan, it wasn't by accident that Shanahan and Lynch brought Sam in there before he ended up in Minnesota, now Seattle. And it's not by accident that Mac Jones is there. They didn't just bring a guy in and play, pin the tail on the donkey. Let's have that guy. We got a blindfold on. There was a method to the madness, and it's paying off for them. Keep an eye on that situation at quarterback, Segs. If this keeps on and Mac Jones plays another week or two and they win, I'm just telling you, that's a dangerous situation when it comes to a quarterback standing over there and want his gig back. If Mac Jones plays like this, how do you take him out of the lineup? How do you? And then the McVay play calling. Stags, the quarterback in me says, like Stafford, we go for it. I ain't here to tie anything, man. It's overtime. Now, if it was sudden death overtime, Stags, where after you play it and then we don't have ties, guess what I'm doing? I'm kicking it, and then I'll trust my defense to get off the field, even though Mac was having a good game. Then I'm going to believe in him that we're going to be able, that we're going to get another shot at it because it's sudden death, and we'll just keep rolling over the time. But in the situation there, I get why you're thinking, I got to go. I'm putting this damn thing away. We ain't playing for no tie because that half game may end up being the division when all is done. Now they lost the game in it. So some self-inflicted problems, some great job. And the 49ers to stop them on fourth and one, as what Fred Warner said, we knew by the body language what they were going to do, and they stuffed it. I don't like the call. I'm not bummed that McVay actually went for it, because he trusts his team, and there's a message in that. 49ers were just better last night, man.
I absolutely love the fact that he went for it. Yep. I just hate the fact that he didn't put the ball in Matt Stafford's hands, because
no question,
outside of Mac Jones, Matt Stafford was the other best player on the field last night. He was fucking awesome. I mean, some of those throws he made in overtime on that drive that got them.
Good, man.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I'm not so sure he's not even better now than he was 5 years ago.
Six years.
I think that experience now, and he's physically not losing anything with the arm, but mentally he's even, I mean, he continues, because the old saying that once you figure it out mentally, you physically can't do it anymore. Him, the guy can still throw at 150 miles an hour, and his decisions, and mentally, he feels like pre-snap, he has a pretty good idea what they're doing defensively, and he's able to execute. So, yeah, I didn't like the call. I'm always going down with my best, and we know who the best is. And you know what? We said going into the game stage, what did I say? It doesn't matter if it's 3rd and 6, 3rd and 2. We're talking about large and what we do. I would have done something, play action out of it, and get Nacua doing his thing. And I would have just said, Matt, go win it for us and be smart with your decision, and let's get a first down. I get it. But, you know, the 49ers are selling out to the run. I would have put the ball in my best player. I always believe if I'm going down, I'm going down with my best with the ball in his hand.
Yeah,
I just do.
Yeah. Going back to Mac Jones, though, before we play a clip of something he said after the game that I just absolutely loved, just the fact that, you know, he went out there and just made play after play after play. That one throw he made that they were backed up against the end zone, and he stood in the pocket, and I mean, took a shot. I'm not sure who it was that hit him. And he just, I mean, he put the ball right in the receiver's chest. And I mean, you weren't seeing that in New England. You weren't seeing this quarterback right now.
They were so limited players wise in New England.
Exactly.
You gave him a few weapons, right?
But here you're talking about like what happens when Brock Purdy is healthy enough to play, and what goes on. This is Mac Jones was asked about it after the game, and this is what he had to say.
I think, you know, they brought me here to play as a backup, and that's my job. And Brock's the starter of this team, and right now he's dealing with something. And for him to go out there last week and play when, you know, he probably wasn't a full health, like, he cares about this team. So I'm just trying to get some wins for him so it helps us down the line. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. Like, I've been in his position. I've been a starter, and you want your backup to go in there and win, because at the end of the season that could be the hit or miss between a playoff or not. So,
I mean, that's just perfectly said. And it goes back to the whole Shedeur Sanders situation. That's how you talk to the media. If they're asking you time and time again, and I know he's getting that microphone in his face all the time, but man, just learn from quarterbacks who have done it, that are backups, that understand that they're backups right now. And yeah, does Mac Jones want to be the starter? Fuck yeah. He sees what he knows what he's doing out there. He knows how well he's played. Yeah, he wants that job. But he knows that right now it's Brock Purdy's team, and they'll figure it out from there.
Segs, I've been in Mac Jones' position where I came in and then they kept me in, pull you back out. And I've also been where you played well, but the other guy's really good and deserve to be the starter. Hell, whether it's Jim or obviously Warren Moon, McMahon, Rich Gannon, great player, went on to win an MVP. So I've seen both ends of it where, oh, okay, they believed in me, but as a back, you go play a couple of good games, and then you're back to the bench where you're like, but those two wins that you got for them helped you at the end of the season. That's my job, drive right. The bus. And then there's times when you get it and you start a few games and you hope it's your job, but you also know that, hey, man, can you lose your job to injury? Of course you can. Kurt Warner got his job, Trent Green, and kept it. But you can also, the support system that is your job and having a good quarterback room, your job's to win him. And I fully believe Brock Purdy wants Mac Jones to win games. And when I suggested that, keep an eye on that, the reason I said that, if Brock's not fully healthy and Mac keeps winning, just by that alone, by attrition alone and injury, you're going to keep him in a lineup. If he keeps winning and you win seven in a row or six in a row, you would be doing a disservice to the team to hope that Brock comes back and gets hot. Now, that doesn't mean it's his full-time job, but it's his job now. And that's the way I always approach it as a backup when I went in. It's my job tonight. And I want to make it miserable on the coaching staff to take me out, not to create controversy, but to create that they have two good guys that can play. And I think that's always the goal. And I was fortunate to play with great player in Warren, great player in Wade Wilson, phenomenal player in Jim McMahon, and a hell of a player with McMahon, Warren Moon, Rich Gannon. Dude, I was fortunate to play with a bunch of them. But they all wanted me to go in and make plays because If they got the job in December, we need two wins, and you got two wins for them at the beginning. Now we go in the playoffs, and their job, they're the starter, and you go in and do it. That's why you get paid. Well, with that, and that's how you're supposed to handle a press conference as well. You mentioned Shedeur Sanders, and Mac Jones is playing, and they're talking to him. Yeah. He's not the third-team guy where they're not talking. I mean, where they're talking to him, and he should, and he's not playing. So I thought it was good. And listen, Mac Jones threw that. Yes, great support. Yes, it's Brock's. He's starting quarterback. But don't kid yourself. He's going to prepare every week to have a coach knock on the door and say, come on and see me. You're the guy right now. And really, you don't have to make that decision, Sags. He's not ready. Brock is still banged up. Tribute to Mac Jones staying ready. Can you imagine? Now, he'd have no shot if they're 1-3 with him as a quarterback or 1-2, or they didn't win a game. They would have said he's ill-prepared. He's what we thought he was, what the rest of the league thought he was. He's a backup guy that was overdrafted. That's what they'd say. But now it's like, we got two that can win. And I'm telling you, you're going to need them both the rest of the year, more than likely. And you thought you were going to need them both, and maybe a third last night when Mac got hit. Let me take you back to that throw you're talking about, Sigs. I talked to Dan Fouts years ago, who was as good a tough pocket passer there's ever been. And I had asked him, and I think I've mentioned on this show maybe in the past, but just bears reminding, I said, what is leadership, man? He was doing the game as a broadcaster, and I was starting the next day, and they were there to do their meetings the Saturday before, right? And Dan, I was sitting in my locker, and Dan walked by, and I'd known him all the years because North Turner, my coach, went to school with Dan, and I'd gone to watch the Chargers practice. And my admiration for his leadership and the way he was tough in the pocket, I wasn't a scrambler, so I had to gain respect there, right? And, you know, everybody thinks a 400-yard passing game and looking for touchdowns is how you earn your team's respect. And so I said, Dan, tell me how you describe a leader. He goes, well, you want to know how I describe a leader? Which epitomized, and it was the flashing neon sign of who Dan Fouts was. He said, stand in a pocket, knowing you're going to get hit right in the mouth, staring it down, and delivering the football without excuse.
Right.
Those five guys up front and those defensive guys, your teammates, they'll give you far more respect for that and leadership qualities for that than they will your 420-yard, I'm pretty game, didn't get hit, delivering the football. He goes, anybody can do that when things are right. But taking that shot to the chin like he did, and not only delivered it, but then he delivered it on time and made the completion. That right there, I'm telling you, Segs, when they're watching tape today in San Francisco, they're not talking about Mac Jones's touchdown passes. I mean, they are at the quarterback meeting and how they won.
Right.
But among themselves, when they're saying, that's one tough son of a bitch.
Yeah.
That is how you take it to the next level. So, and Brock Purdy's got that in him too. But It's a good thing for the 49ers to know that, hell, I can win with either. And that's the whole goal. I never wanted Minnesota not to be able to win with me if Rich was banged up and I went in, because I'm letting down a whole bunch of people. And you're a chicken shit if you're not prepared because you said, I'm not the starter, and you pouted about it. I was fortunate. And then Brad Johnson come along. I had great quarterback rooms when I was playing, but they all rooted for you. They all knew you were competing against each other. But in truth, Mac Jones really isn't competing against Brock Purdy. He's competing against the defense to put enough stuff on there. And then the coaches are going to make whatever decision they want. Healthy quarterback rooms matter, Sags. And both of these guys, even though they got drafted, one was at the top of the draft, Nira, one was at the bottom of it, the literal bottom of it.
Yep.
They're both so similar in how you got to call a game for them, because they're never going to beat you, dominating you with athleticism. They're going to dominate you with good decisions, good play calling, and accurate throw and playing tough. And the guy on the other side is not only tough, but he could throw at 100 million miles an hour and make every throw in the world. So you got a taste of two different types, both successful. But what a blessing for the 49ers to have Mac Jones doing what he did last night.
Yeah, and just to end the talk on this game, just a brutal way to lose that game with Kyren Williams fumbling that ball at the one. I mean, he had the clear lane. And I think, you know, you're a running back and you're, and he's down low. So he's just thinking like, I am good. I am scoring this run. Like, I'm scoring the touchdown. And then just a big old hand comes flying in and it's just perfectly put on the ball that just knocks it out. I mean, it happens. We see it every week. Just a big paw comes in and hits the ball, or just a perfect peanut punch that Peanut Tillman started and causes the fumble. But the Rams had that game won, and to lose like they did both times by fumbling the ball on the goal line and then on fourth and one, giving it back to him.
Not moving the pile.
The ball in your best. Yeah. Not moving the pile. And if you watch it, gosh, I can't remember if it was Orlovsky or somebody had the play from above.
And all they, 22. Yeah.
Yeah. And they slid in a wide receiver and a tight end to try and block that area where Kyren Williams was running. Like, that can't be your best play on fourth and one. And first of all, you're not putting the ball in Matt Stafford's hands, and you're running behind a wide receiver and a tight end. Just not good enough from Sean McVay, who called an excellent game. But no, in that moment, I did not like that call. But Kyren Williams, tough way to end.
Your field goal kicker walk, I mean, was really good. Clutch last night. Thanks, you know, and I love the way Williams handled it too. He said, listen, man. He was more bothered by – he said, I laid the ball on the ground. He goes, he was more bothered by that because he said, I feel like my one play – he goes, we made mistakes, did good things. He goes, but my one play did cost us and bother. And I get it, and it did. Yeah. But listen, those are one of those things we see that before. The guy may try to get the ball out of his hands, and you did. One fell swoop, and the ball lays on the ground. And then you're hoping you can recover it, right? And all things happened, and I don't ever say great effort because both teams, I'm paid to give effort, but some good, smart football and some unfortunate things. You tell me this, it goes back to what I say all the time. Did it not come down to about six or eight plays in a game? Yep. Backed up, making a throw for a first down, getting hit in the mouth. Field goal kicker, long range, knocking one down. You on fourth and one, not being able to execute. You on the other side, being able to strip sack, get the ball on the ground and recover it. That's four right there. That's four right there. Hell, and then, you know, a couple of great Stafford throws to keep you in it, give you a chance to close it out. So less than 10 plays was the difference in the game last night. We're going to focus on the fumble and the play call. That's two. And both of them were very relevant in the outcome of the game. But the 49ers executed in clutch times better than the Rams did last night. And it'll make the Rams sick until they get to tee it up and play again. That's for sure.
Yeah. We mentioned that we have a fun Saturday slate of college football games. And to give you our poll question of the day, which one loss SEC team is most likely to be left out of the playoffs? Your choices are Alabama, LSU, Texas, and Tennessee. Sean, which way would you lean that when you saw the poll question today?
Now, I love the way that the quarterback's playing at Alabama. I think the logical choice, because I still don't, and I know they went into Georgia and played well, Segs. I don't know if I trust them not to lose a game or two more as the season goes on. Fair enough.
Yeah.
I actually think two of the four are going to miss out on the playoffs. I think there's another one in there. I do. I think Ole Miss is going to be a playoff team.
Yep.
Now, listen, to timing help. I'm telling you, LSU's in danger if they're not careful, Segs. Keep you watch that. And Texas, they go around dick around against Florida this week. If you said, Sean, over under 1.5 of these four who don't make it, I'm not sure I wouldn't take the over.
Yeah.
I'm serious. Now, I know it's the SEC. I know we got 12 teams. The reason I'm saying it, not that this loss that's going to eliminate any of these teams, I'm talking about the way offense in Texas is playing. Do you see, Segs, if they keep playing like that, they're going to get beat by somebody else.
Yes.
They just are. And their offensive line, they lost four guys to the end. They lost four starters, and they're going to have to overcome. And Arch is going to have to play better.
Yeah.
Take a look at LSU. You can say what you want. There's a lot of talk that Nussmeier's, they're talking, is he hurt or is he? Because their production's been subpar.
Yeah.
And that ain't going to get much easier for them. And then you look at Alabama, while they wouldn't beat Georgia, they're capable of getting beat by Vanderbilt this week. Now, the question is, if they all lose, and they have two losses, Well, then three of them are probably going to make it. One's going to get left behind. I'm just saying that the two teams I would pick, I would have taken Alabama first, but yet their quarterback's playing better than any of the other team's three quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Period. He's playing better than the other ones are. But my thing is that they're going to lose not only one to get to two, but that there may be two losses from here on out for two more of those teams. And which two? Take your choice. So I'm going to say one for sure. I'm going to take Alabama, but I'm not so sure one more is not going to lose two games unless they get their offense kickstarted.
What if I throw Georgia into the mix? Are they a team that you're kind of...
I think Georgia loses again, and I think they're done.
Okay. So you would have, if Georgia's now, in there too, you would put them in that same category as like a team that most likely will miss the playoffs.
Right. Now, I trust Kirby. There's something missing from Georgia right now, Sags. I guess compared to what we're used to. Does that make sense?
Right. 100%.
In truth, there was already, they wouldn't be they'd already have another loss, because if Tennessee plays their cards right, that game's over. And Kirby knows it. Now, I love Kirby Smart. But Segs, I don't think Georgia's done getting beat. And now they're going to play pissed after what happened with Alabama. But still, you can play as pissed as you want. Somebody punches you in the mouth. So maybe we're not going to get – and it's a deep, a lot of good teams. Maybe we're not going to get all the SEC teams we thought. But remember, we're still in the first week of October.
Yeah.
All those teams there can turn it around. All of a sudden, Kalen DeBoer is rolling after they beat Georgia, and it kickstarts their momentum and their confidence, and here we go. So all four of those teams, I don't believe, are making it, simply because I think there's more than a loss this weekend on their schedule. Just from what I've seen, how they've played at times this year, I would take the over on 1.5, I think, because I think there's more than one loss in them. That's just my gig.
Yeah. We're going to start something.
Texas is lucky you're not seeing Mateer in 2 weeks, Sags. I'm just telling you. They are big lucky time. They're not seeing him.
Big time. I think that could be the difference when we talk about if Texas makes the playoff or not, the fact that they didn't have to play Mateer. We're going to start something every week where we pick three NFL games, where we pick three college games against the spread. We'll talk about the over-under if we say you should pick it or not. But we're going to start college. We're talking college. We just did the poll question this college. Let's talk about the game you've been talking about. Texas going to the Swamp at Florida. Texas is a 5.5-point favorite. The over-under sits at 42.5. Which way are you leaning here?
Well, I'm leaning. If I'm judging offensive production, the way they've played, give me the under. The under. And what's the strength of both teams right now, Sags?
Defense.
The Longhorns are physical, and they play defense. And Lagway is he's starting to get going a bit, but he hasn't played as well as we're used to, what we thought at the beginning of the year. I mean, Billy Napier, there's already there's people now that are rooting. I mean, talking about students that are rooting on some of these message boards, are rooting for Florida to lose their own team because they want Billy Napier out. Now, imagine that. I want him to lose because there's a chance we'll go in and win because they don't like the way Arch is playing. They're rooting against their team so their coach gets fired. Now, I'm sorry, brother. I don't care how bad my team's playing. I ain't rooting against Lincoln Riley to lose.
Never.
So he gets fired. Ever. But that's going on some of the – we talked about on the local show this morning here in Houston. So there's that. Defense, the under reeks in this one. I mean, it feels like that's where it's got to go. Now, which one of these quarterbacks won't play better?
Right.
It put it this way. The quarterback, if quarterback urinates down his leg, you can forget it. Segs, so I'd lean under in the game just from what I body of work this year. Now, I've played in the Swamp. It ain't that much fun. It's tough. People are fighting for jobs. Quarterback. There's people that are already saying, well, Arch is overrated. Get him out. They want, you know how this goes, the hyperbolic shit, right? Segs, Florida's defense pretty good too. They're playing better. Give me the under. And you said 5.5, right?
Yes, Texas minus 5.5.
Give me Florida with the points. I'll take if you're giving me 5.5, Florida keeps it inside the number. That's what I'm going with.
I agree with you on the under. I think with the way these two teams are playing, this feels like an under.
I'm not going to bet this game. This is just for this.
Yes.
I don't trust the 5.5 enough, but Florida Swamp, the way Texas's offense is played, I think you can hang around in this game if you're Florida.
Yeah, I think if you're looking at this game, I like the under because I don't trust either quarterback right now in the system with what they're playing and how Agreed. They've been playing. But I would prefer Texas minus the 5.5. I just don't know. I think Texas's defense is so good. And with the way Florida's offense is played, that I think you can get multiple turnovers if you're the Longhorns, which can lead to points and, you know, like
a, so you're thinking like a 23-13 type game.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to say 24-13. Yeah. Where I had it. Something like that. So I like Texas minus the 5.5.
Which quarterback do you trust more in this game? Which quarterback, if they have which quarterback going in, you say, I don't care where they played it. Which one do you trust more? Do you fear more right now?
I feel like if it's just pure trust, it's Arch. He does not have the propensity to turn the ball over like Lagway. But if you're just talking
fear, going to try to throw it in tighter windows.
Yes. Right? Yeah. If you're talking, who do I fear more? It's probably Lagway because he has the upside to go nuts. So it's just one of those.
I'm going to tell you,
look at this game, you probably just stay away.
I'm talking about it on here, but I'll be damned. Unless something crazy happens to me down there, I ain't touching this game with that point spread because I'm expecting that Florida's at some point going to erupt offensively. Yet, yes. This is the wrong team to do it against because they're really physical on defense. Sags, I want you to keep an eye on our viewers. Keep an eye on this. Did a dive and had somebody – was talking to somebody that gave me another number that is alarming. And I won't give you all the numbers. I'll just give you what the result is. If you force Arch Manning on the run, dude, he is not accurate. I mean, he's not accurate. Really? I would expect interior blitzes. And, you know, he's got good feet running. Yeah. Interior blitzes to force him to move east and west to see if he can be accurate on the run because the metrics are overwhelming. He is frighteningly inaccurate when he's forced off the spot and out of the pocket. So you don't want these blitzes that force somebody to up gives him a little more vision. The interior blitzes was forces him sideways. Keep an eye on Florida's pressures inside there this week.
Would you say that inaccuracy comes from when he gets pushed out of the pocket and he's moving, that comes from trying to rush to make plays or being kind of panicked? That's why his accuracy is off when it comes to that?
I think it's also it's the rushed part. And then what do you, the normal for me, Segs, when I scramble and I watch it, the first thing that comes to me when a guy gets out of the pocket, when I did is this is a chance to make a big play. They missed out by not getting the sack. I'm going to hit a home run. And the second one, which is so underrated, we always talk about mechanics in the pocket. Segs, you know, that guy that scrambles, let's say you force him to his right and he's right-handed, but he doesn't square his shoulders. So he's running, he's running parallel line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
So you never threaten the underneath coverage. And you got to throw a sidearm. You know, you do instead of getting some depth, you scramble and you're playing downhill where you're a run threat, yeah. But you're also going towards the target so you can get your arm angle in a different spot. Keep an eye on the mechanics when he's forced left or forced right. Does he square? Different story. Because I can tell you what mechanics, I mean, your numbers go down immensely when you're playing the spectacular off angle throw and off platform throw because you're trying to be a hero. See when he scrambles that there is that intuition to mechanic up and play downhill as opposed to parallel the line of scrimmage. And that's it too. In the first game happened, aside from the fact his arm angle in the pocket was a problem. So I'm anxious to see both are athletic, obviously athletic enough, he and Lagway, but both are having struggles stringing together four quarters of great football. And it won't get any easier this week. It's going to be loud and all that. And there's some desperation involved, especially for Florida. But keep an eye on that and the pressures that if Florida, obviously they'll look at the metrics and say, yeah. Let's see if we can make him uncomfortable outside the pocket, see if his accuracy increases. I'm not comfortable with this game. I think Texas is going to win it. But if we're in the middle of the third quarter and it's a tie score, Florida's hanging around, and it's going to be dangerous for them because then you're going to put more pressure on Texas's offense to live up to what we thought they'd be at the preseason.
Yeah. Jumping to Tuscaloosa, we got Vandy coming in 5-0, facing off against Bama, who's played well, coming off the win over Georgia. This game sits Bama minus 10.5 with a 55.5 over under number.
I'm taking the over in the game. Both quarterbacks are really good and dynamic playmakers. We know the vet Vandy. He's got him rolling. I think that Vandy's real. 10.5 seems like a lot. The hook matters to me. Did I say take the over on the points? I said, right?
You said so, over.
I said, yeah, take the over. I'm okay with that because I think teams are going to score. But 10.5 with a veteran quarterback to a team that even though they're 3-1 and coming off a big win, I just think that this is backdoor cover written all over it. I think Alabama's going to win in their building. I do. But I think this is a dangerous game. And Segs, don't kid yourself. They do remember what happened to them when they went to Vanderbilt. They know. And if you got any pride at all, you're not letting a team that's not supposed to be here. Vanderbilt's different. This isn't the Vanderbilt that Jay Cutler went to school there. Right. You know, great quarterback, but damn, you're going to win 6 games or 4 games or 3 games. Or when James Franklin turned it around. They're real. I just think there's a reason they set that hook where it's at 10.5. I think this has backdoor cover written all over it. Close game, a little more high scoring than maybe you'd think with an Alabama team going in there, but a veteran quarterback that will protect it and do his thing. Give me the over slightly, and give me Vanderbilt inside the number.
Okay. I like that. I have the exact opposite written down. I think Bama's defense is getting better each week. I know they gave up a lot of points to Georgia last week, but I feel like you can see the difference from early in the year.
You think Vanderbilt's overrated?
I do think Vanderbilt's a little bit overrated.
At 5-0, well, okay.
Yes, yes. Okay. I mean, I just look at them, and it just feels like, you know, they just kind of playing with house money at this point, and I just feel like we do this every year with them. Like, they haven't beaten anybody. Yes, they beat South Carolina, but I think South Carolina is overrated. I really like Sellers, but I think as a team, they're overrated as well. So I just feel like they haven't really, really been tested yet. So I think Alabama's defense is playing better, and Ty Simpson is the difference here.
If there's a blowout, it'll be Alabama. If they jump on them early, meaning Alabama's up 21-3 in the first half, it could get really ugly and sideways, right?
Yeah.
And I will not be surprised if that happens. While I think that 18 may be a little too high for them, there's something to be said about a road quarterback who's got guts and thinks he's really good, and he is. He ain't lacking any confidence. Yeah. No. So I like Alabama in the game, Segs, but I do think – and when I say backdoor cover, even if they get inside the number, Vanderbilt does, it may have been a good ass kicking, but you got that last goal and then another touchdown to close the gap. But if there's a blowout, Vanderbilt's not blowing them out in Tuscaloosa. If there's a blowout, it'll side with Alabama. That's for sure.
Yeah. And then we got the big one at night, 6:30 Central start, Miami at FSU. Miami comes in as a road favorite, -4.5. FSU coming off the loss to Virginia. This over-under sits at 54.5.
Why don't you start with this one? Tell me what you
think. This one I've got. I'm taking Miami -4.5. I think they're clearly the better team. I think we saw Florida State come into the season with something to prove, and they were playing a little bit over their heads. And a good Virginia football team beat them, but I think they kind of showed the flaws of Florida State. So I think that Carson Beck and company can go in there. They can score a lot of points. And sits at 54.5. I would take the over when we're talking this game as well. So yeah, I like Miami and the over here. And I think Miami could put up 40 plus points here against the Seminoles, even in Tallahassee.
Yeah. Carson Beck's got to show me something in a game this big after coming off a loss, Segs. What I'm saying? Was it last week they got beat or the week before, Segs? I'm sitting here thinking, when did Miami take their loss?
I think it was last week.
Was it last week? Because I was in Hawaii. The weeks are running.
Yeah.
Regardless, I've seen that guy be really good, and I've also seen him get that look in his eye that says, all hell. You know what I mean? But he's had a pretty good year so far. I'm with you on both counts. I am taking Miami. I think Miami can win the whole thing if he plays well the rest of the season. I do. I think their swagger's back. The energy in that building is going to be off the charts. It is going to be off the friggin' charts, in my opinion, Segs. I think
Miami's 4-0, by the way. I was
oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. I take that back. Florida State got beat. Miami, yes. Even though Carson Beck had when he got banged up, they still won the football game.
Yes, they beat Florida last week.
That's exactly right. So, like I told you, Florida's giving me Florida State's the only team with a loss in this game, but Miami, Carson Beck has played good, and then he had a moment where it was like getting knocked around and missed a few throws. And so as long as he continues his ascent to the way he's played since he's left, back at it, the way he was when he first started there at Georgia, I like it. Yeah, that's exactly right. I looked at the rankings this morning, said Miami hadn't lost a game. It's Florida State and their loss, which was a tough one that they took. I like Miami, and I do like the over. I think points will be scored, but the energy in the building today is going to be through the roof. It's going to be through the roof. And I love Miami's looking closer and closer to the way we – now they're far from what we know Miami Hurricanes to be when they were that team. But this is the first time in a minute that I felt as confident about Miami as I do. I think they can win the whole thing, and I'm not sure – they're not playing as the most complete team in the country. The whole thing, they're going to win a ton of games. If Carson Beck plays like a Heisman Trophy guy, Miami can beat anybody. And I'm telling you, they can beat anybody at home or on the road. I like this team. Give me Miami. I was the whole time when you were talking, give me the over and give me Miami in the game. I think that they're – matter of fact, I'm not even sure 4.5 is enough, to be honest with you. I'm not.
All right, so we'll switch over to the NFL now. So each week, every Friday, we're going to do 3 college, 3 NFL throughout the season. We'll keep track, see who's better when we're picking these games. But let's start with 2-1-3 teams, but a big-time game in terms of you don't want to be getting behind in your division too much. That's the 1-3 Texans, who are 2.5-point road favorite over the Ravens. This game's in Baltimore. Over under set at 41.5.
I don't see enough from either offense. Give me the under. Texans defense is really good. Baltimore's defense will play better because the Texans offense has played one quarter of good football. One. And they did it against Tennessee. So listen, I talked to an insider today that said that Lamar's not practicing, but they're preparing for him possibly to play. Lamar's not playing. It's going to be Cooper Rush. Cooper Rush has been a good backup and solid. Again, Derrick Henry on first and second down averages 6 yards a carry. And you know who the last team in the league at giving it to the running back on first and second down is? The Baltimore Ravens. They are 32nd handing the ball off to Derrick Henry on first, second down. And when they do give it to him, they're like second. He's averaging 6 yards a carry. I would imagine you're going to see a steady – and he dominates the Texans every time he plays them. So I'm going to say steady diet. This may be one of the balls not heavy, dude. There'll be an ice plunge waiting for you, a plunge pool. You're getting 40 touches. I think Todd Monken's going to have to get into that this week and then mix in play action and in the low 20s or mid-20s throws for Cooper Rush. Listen – the radio station is going to go nuts here locally if the Texans go in there and lose to an injured team and a no Lamar Jackson team. They've never won in Baltimore. That continues. Give me straight up. They're the underdog. Ooh. Baltimore is going to win at home. And Derrick Henry. And it's not because of defense. I think the defense will give him some shots and they'll do it. But I can tell you this, Segs, on the other side, I have not seen enough good from the Texans, regardless of the injuries on defense. I've not seen enough good offense from the Texans to tell me that they're all of a sudden going to explode in Baltimore. I like the under, low scoring game. I like the straight up win for the Baltimore Ravens as the underdog at home.
Wow. Okay. I like that. Yeah. I think when you look at this game, two guys to keep an eye on outside of Derrick Henry when it comes to Baltimore offense is Mark Andrews, Zay Flowers. They're the two best weapons that they have outside of Derrick Henry.
And they're both playing, obviously, both healthy and playing.
If Cooper Rush can get them the ball, and especially Zay Flowers in space, Mark Andrews picking up first downs on 3rd and 6, 3rd and 5, that's how I think you can beat the Texans if you're the Ravens. But I still have the Texans winning this game. I think they will do just enough. I also have the under because I don't trust either of these offenses right now. And that probably just means that we're going to see like a 31-30 game. And
the Rams and 49ers did us like that last night, Segs, as far as, you know, thinking that, you know, are they going to be able to explode and Mac Jones and all these injuries, what's going to happen? And, 8.5-point favorite. Well, they put a stop to that real quick, didn't they? So, listen, this is one of those two that I don't want to touch with my own money because I don't know how Cooper Rush is going to play. I don't. But I just am. I need more from the Texans offense. And, yeah, you know, Baltimore's pride. I'm sure John Harbaugh wasn't pleasant on the practice field this week with his team, because they're not an excuse-making team. So that's good. And, you know, folks, just so you know what I'm saying, Segs and I don't talk about who we're going to pick before we come on here. So it's I like the fact that three or four of them we've picked a little bit different, and how where our trust level sits. And I'm my Texan stuff maybe just simply show me, man. I'm challenging your ass, right? I'm challenging you to go do something. And I just trust the Ravens' overall product more. Man, do I love the Texans' defense, Segs. But they're going to get tested physically at the line of scrimmage with Derrick Henry, I assure you. They'll change those metrics this week.
A really interesting game. We've talked a lot about the Eagles this week and kind of how they're winning games. And they're 4-0. And now you got the 2-2 Broncos coming in with a really good defense. This game sits, it's in Philly. Eagles minus 3.5 with an over under of 43.5. You want me to start this one or you?
Go ahead.
All right. I'm going, when you talk about the over under, I think both these defenses are really good. I think the Philadelphia defense is a little shaky right now, but I do feel like they're getting better, getting a little more healthy. I think losing Nolan Smith to IR hurts because your pass rush, but I think with the way they're built that they can sustain it and kind of, because Bo Nix, we know, likes to make plays outside the pocket. He likes to kind of just beat you with big plays and the way he likes to move around. But I'm going Broncos here. I think that it's an under and the Broncos. Give me the points. I'll take the Broncos. I think the Broncos might go in there and win. I think maybe a little bit of Philly's luck has run out when it comes to all the statistical anomalies that we've seen from this team, that being one of the worst passing offenses, being one of the worst, you know, an average run offense with Saquon Barkley.
It's a damn good defense, Segs. Damn good defense. Yeah.
I saw yesterday a stat that said, and the headline was, do the Eagles miss Mekhi Becton, who's now with the Chargers, that signed as a free agent? Last year, Saquon was averaging, I think it was almost 6 yards in between the tackles. This year, he's almost to 3. I mean, it's almost cut in half the amount of yards that he's not gaining this year. And that could be because a big monster like Mekhi Becton, who's huge, that was playing right guard, is not eating up space, not eating up blockers or defensive players, excuse me, that something's different about the Eagles. They're still really good and they know how to win football games, but I think
they do know if it's close, they find ways, buddy. Yes, you know that. And if it's fourth and one, they're getting the first down.
Yes. Well, yeah, that's 100%.
Okay. Sure. So you're taking the under in the Broncos.
Yeah. I may actually bet this game and take the Broncos outright.
I am betting this game. And what do you think I'm choosing?
I'm going to say the Eagles.
I'm going under points. This is 23-21, 23-20. I got the Broncos as well.
Oh, okay.
Now I think Philadelphia can win the game. If I was betting, I'm not betting the money line. I'm gonna bet the game with the points. I think it's an under because I think I think Vic Fangio can create a lot of problems for Bo Nix. Yet I also think that Sean Payton, using Bo Nix's feet as well, can create some problems for Philadelphia with some broken plays. This says 23-20. This says 23-21. I do believe it's 44.5, right? Vegas ain't stupid, brother. Vegas ain't stupid. Then the number's 44. Give me a half point on the under. I'm taking the under, and I think it's a field goal game and maybe even a walk-off field goal game. I'll take the Broncos at plus 3.5.
Wow. Okay. So we agree on that one. I like that. I the only maybe little, not disagreement, but I think I might take the Broncos money line.
If they walk out of here with a win, it will not shock me one bit because the Broncos know what's – you can't keep teetering on we know how to win if you're Philadelphia and then play a game where, well, we know how to win, we're going to be fine. If you run into a team that's got a really good defense, it may not let you. And on the other side, a quarterback, they're gaining confidence. 2-2, the Broncos are better than a 2-2 team. I know the record says you are who you are, but I have the Broncos competing for a playoff spot going into the season, and I still think that that's viable. I do.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. The thing to watch for me is the A.J. Brown situation. You know,
get him involved early. Yeah.
Yes, things are bubbling. But, you know, if you have Patrick Surtain following you and you're A.J. Brown, that ball might not be coming to you earlier. And then all of a sudden, does he start getting frustrated? They're down, say 14-9 or whatever it is, 14-10 late in the third, and he's got two catches for 14 yards. Does that start to bubble? And then some other, you know, and then it just kind of builds and builds because it is building. There's going to be something. It's either going to be a huge monster game for AJ Brown, or there's going to be a blow up here in the next couple weeks. I think
he's a wide receiver, Sigs. They got to get theirs. You know they that. And I love it. Right.
And the last game we'll pick here real quick, Bucks at Seahawks. I think maybe the game of the weekend for me. I think this might be the game of the weekend. Two really good teams. Seahawks -3.5 with a 44.5 over under.
I love this game too, man. And I'm going to tell you what, the one thing you get, both these quarterbacks are a bitch when they're going good for different reasons. I'm taking the over, and I'm taking Tampa Bay 3.5 points, +3.5. I think Seattle's dangerous, but they're Baker Mayfield, dude, if the game's close and he's got the ball, look out. I think both quarterbacks will play well enough. This to me, is a 27-24 type game. So I like the over in the game. And I like both quarterbacks to play well. It will not shock me after what happened. Baker Mayfield did not like the way it turned out last week. It bothered him, right? Obviously. And Seattle's playing really – your guy coaching up the defense stays pretty friggin' good, right? They're doing – I mean, as the coach, but their defense has really responded. And I love Darnold, but I love – Mayfield's played as well as any quarterback in the league the last couple years, not named maybe Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. He and Goff are like the next 3 and 4 in my mind, just numbers-wise. I love his leadership. I think we're in for a hell of a game, and I think it's a fourth quarter game. I'm taking a lot of road teams this week, or a lot of underdogs. I mean, you know, it's the Ravens underdogs. I got Tampa Bay +3.5, Sigs. Is that 4.5? Should I say +4.5 on the road against Seattle? I'm not sure Seattle's not going to win, but that's why it's called betting. I don't need to pick the winner unless I want to pick the money line. I'm going to take the over, and I'm going to take Tampa at +4.5.
Okay, so that line is Triple E puts it up. That line has moved since I looked at it this morning because it was 3.5. So now it sits at 4.5, and it doesn't change.
Is somebody hurt that I don't know?
Well, on Tampa, Bucky Irving is not playing, and Mike Evans out. And
that's what I knew. Evans and Irving were out, but I didn't know if like because of change if something happened that I haven't seen since when I got home from my morning show. But Segs, another thing, and I want you to make your pick, is when you lose those guys, there's something about certain guys that we see it all the time. We saw it last night in San Francisco on the road doing their thing where everybody's going to say you're shorthanded. I think the bigger, as much as I like Mike Evans, Mr. Consistency, first ballot Hall of Famer, how hard Irvin runs is important to me, man.
Big time.
And losing that physicality. But I think this is another close game. I'm dog filled this week, brother. I got a lot of all the dog. Matter of fact, all the dogs in the NFL? I've taken all dogs.
Yeah. I'm so like hesitant on the over under. I don't know what I really like, but I have chosen the over. I think you're looking at like a 27-24 type game.
Agreed. That's where I'm at, in the 20s. Agreed. Yeah,
give me Seattle, even -4.5. I liked it more at 3.5, but I'll take Seattle -4.5. And I think they can go in there with this defense and do enough with Tampa traveling cross country later Sunday game. I think that defense, Mike McDonald's defense, can do enough to slow down Baker Mayfield without Evans and Bucky Irving, that they can keep this. And you said Darnold, that offense is starting to play better, it feels like, every single week. So give me the Seahawks, the over, like 27-20.
Another thing I like about this game, Sigs, a little sidebar, is two quarterbacks who were 1 and 3 in the draft picked, two quarterbacks that were left for dead by a couple franchises said they're done, two quarterbacks who revitalized their career in cities they didn't start in, and quite frankly, both of those cities now not only rely on them, they have to have them.
Yes.
And Baker and Sam. And the biggest key to this game, and it's crazy as we talk good about both quarterbacks, is which one makes the erratic dumb throw. Say, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, Baker's going to take chances, dude. It doesn't matter. He is going to take chances. And we know Darnold trusts his arm as much as anybody in the league. And Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota said, dude, you don't have to make every throw. Get it to Jefferson on a hitch route, and he'll do something with it. which guy, if it's close and Little decides to try and make that throw and gets baited into something, said, dude, you didn't need to do it.
Right.
I can't wait to see it. This is, even if it's not the best game, this may be my favorite game of the week because I love both affinity for my guy Darnold, but I think both quarterbacks, and it's going to come down to it was one make the throw or throw the check down. Does one miss the throw or overthrow, tries to throw it where he shouldn't, and he had a guy sitting right in front of him. Both of them trust their game, and I like the way both of them play different ways, but both of them have a special skill set. Darnold's more talented, more mobile than people think, and Baker obviously has guts, and his numbers have been off the charts the last year and a half, two years.
Yeah, they've been really good. So that'll be a fun game to watch. One more question as we get out of here, and we're going to enjoy our Saturday of baseball, our Saturday of college football, our Sunday of NFL football and baseball. Are we going to, when you and Coach JB, we start this show on Monday, and at whatever point you guys get into Dylan Gabriel, are we going to be talking about the fact that, wow, this kid played pretty decent, and let's see what he's got as he continues on? Or are we going to hear all over the internet, our TVs, our broadcasts, that, oh, Dylan Gabriel really struggled. Maybe it's time to give Shadur a look. Which are we going to see?
Dylan Gabriel is going to play well enough to keep the gig. There may be, even if he throws for 400, they're going to say, oh, Shadur could have done that. I already know what's coming.
Yeah.
I love that he's a gamer. 49, I mean, Vikings been over there 2 years. Their offensive line's banged up, Segs, which plays right into the Cleveland Browns' hand. I'm just telling you, be careful because the Browns could win a second one. And I know that motivation – think Jackson Dart energy, think Dylan Gabriel energy. Dart's more talented. Gabriel's rugged and tough. The kind of guy that he may come out of this and like Segs 12 of 22 or 14 of 28. But three of those throws were for a first down, two for a touchdown, one that he dove and got a first down. That's who he is. I think this game's more dangerous for the Vikings than people think. I think you're going to see great energy. And I can tell you this. He will not be ill-prepared. He's going to make some throws that he shouldn't make. We're going to be talking on Monday. Here's exactly why Dylan Gabriel keeps the job. That's my opinion.
I think the guy that's going to help him is another rookie. That's Quinshon Judkins.
No question. Boy, what a load he is, huh?
Yeah, he's been awesome since he got back from all the crap he was dealing with early in the offseason or later in the offseason into training camp and so on, then finally got up with the team, and he's worked his way in quick, and he's become a really good back.
Two things, two segs on the court in this is Carson Wentz put up pretty good numbers, starting to get a little more comfortable. If you're Cleveland's defense, you got to get after him immediately.
Yeah.
And get him playing from behind so he does the stuff that's kept him as a journeyman, right? That's one. On the other side of it, Segs, how Dylan Gabriel offensively deals with Brian Flores' pressures, because he's going to blitz as much as anybody, probably going to blitz on times you don't expect it, and probably going to play a little zone on times when you think maybe he should pressure him. But Flores can't help himself, and I love Brian, but you know he's going to go with what he does. Under pressure, you always go with what you do. If Gabriel can handle the blitz, and if they miss, there's going to be a couple broken plays in his game. I think this is a more intriguing game early Sunday morning than we think, even though all the Browns, don't look now. If the Browns win and the Ravens lose, the Browns are second place behind the Steelers. So it's been ugly offensively. At some point in time, they got to score 20 points, don't they? I'm not so sure first one to 21 doesn't win the game in this one, Segs. I think Dylan Gabriel proves why they drafted him where they did, and you see a sense of toughness about him. They're going to hang around. I think we're going to be talking about we like his game.
A lot of fun stuff to watch this weekend. That'll do it for us today on the Friday edition of Unpaved with Sean Salisbury. I'm Adam Sager. You can follow him at Sean Unfiltered, me at Adam G. Sager, the show at Unpaved on Rumble, on Twitter, Threads, any other –
iTunes, YouTube, all over, right?
Look for it. Subscribe.
Everywhere. Yep.
Subscribe, follow, listen, enjoy, and throw questions at us. Next week, we'll start doing fan question of the day.
Yeah, our mailbag from the fans.
So we'll start adding in some stuff as we go here, some must-listen interviews, and we'll have Coach JB next Monday to break all the football that we watch down, and I'm sure he'll hate – a lot of quarterbacks.
Well, first off, I'm going to just say
everybody sucks.
I'm going to say Brock Purdy, Mac Jones, and then I'm going to say, I'll see you in 5 minutes, dude. Let it rip.
But that'll do it. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy your baseball. Enjoy your football. We will talk to you guys next week. Thanks to Triple E. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to everybody. We'll see you guys later. Peace.